in case of non-performance of the obligations, right? See, if either the IMF or the borrowing nation, fail to perform any of the obligations, you don't want to make it legal. Don't want to start a legal lawsuit. So this is the political aspect, the very subtle political aspect of it. To get money from the IMF, the member state in question must sign a letter of intent and submit it to the IMF. The IMF doesn't sign it. That's a commitment to the IMF. But the letter of intent is drafted by the IMF, not by the member state. The member state, if you need money, you do not have any power, bargaining power. The IMF drafts the letter of intent and give it to you, and you sign it. And with this letter of intent, the IMF will make an announcement to lend money to you. So it's not like a commercial contract. It's you a letter of intent and the public statement on the website of the IMF. That's the whole package. Top-down in terms of what?
The thing that the IMF observes the member states, okay, you are in the crisis, so I lend to you. Or in another way, that I need the money, so I need some instant letter to the IMF, and I say yes and sell it. In this way or in another way.
It works this way. The IMF, in consultation with the government, with the leaders of the country in question, draft the letter of intent. It could be several hundred pages long, 300 pages long, and the finance minister or even the prime minister signed the letter of intent. It's a letter to the IMF. Then, with this letter, the IMF will make an announcement that we will allow Indonesia to borrow money from us in installment. And this is how it works under this standby arrangement. The most interesting part, of course, the legal status of the standby. It shouldn't be the IMF. The IMF made it clear that this shouldn't be a legal commitment. This is not a legal document. So you can't sue. No one can sue. Not a legal document. Although sometimes it involves the billions of dollars. But there's no legal contract here. So this is a very interesting legal issue. For our law students, we always want to have a legally binding contract. But the largest loan contract in the world, they are always not legally binding. To avoid any legal, for two reasons. First, to avoid any legal obligation. And the second, to avoid the parliamentary approval. Because for many countries in to borrow money, the government to borrow money from foreign countries, you need approval of the Congress, even the U.S. government, right? Because you do not have fiscal power, you have to budget power. Budgetary power is controlled by Congress. To borrow money U.S. without approval of U.S. Congress, the federal government cannot borrow any money. Right? So this is, but this is not a legal obligation. So you don't need parliamentary approval. Right? Conditionality, that's the most interesting part. To use the IMF money, you have to accept a lot of conditions, the members. This is the most controversial part of IMF's relationship with members. Well, conditionality started very long time ago in the initial stage of the IMF. The UK, As we mentioned, the Bretton Woods system, the Bretton Woods conference had only two actors. the UK, representative from the UK and from the US. Right? Other countries didn't even participate in this. So in the debate between White and John Keynes, the US insisted upon conditions, and the UK did not want to, because the UK, John Keynes anticipated that UK would be borrowing a lot of money from the US to recover its economy. And the US was a credit country. The US was having a lot of money. I told them in the class yesterday that maybe you guys didn't even know this. After the Second World War, the US had 50% of the world GDP and 2/3 of the gold reserve in the world. The US was a much stronger country than it is today. If you divide the world into two countries, one is the US, the other is all the countries combined. The US was still stronger. Now it's already US power has already declined, relatively speaking. US was the lending country. The conditionality. We have to ask two questions. They sound like one question, but actually two questions. If you speak in different tones, what's wrong with conditionality? What's wrong with conditionality? Right. For those who support conditionalities, what's wrong with it? And for those who are against it, there must be something wrong with the conditionality. Right. To answer this question, we take a look at the conditions first. What are the conditions? According to the IMF practice, the IMF, over the years, the IMF countries, those standby, again, those standby arrangement could have several hundred pages, 500 pages, 300 pages. So they set a lot of conditions. So what are those conditions? Well, conditions, monetary policy. Of course, the member state to increase or decrease its interest rate, and in most of the time the IMF it depends on the needs, but the IMF made a lot of mistakes. Change in exchange rates and the supply of money, access to credit, economic policy, regulatory practices. The countries are required to deregulate a lot of industries, to open, to allow foreign companies to have ownership. That's what the IMF did in South Korea. In South Korea, before the Asian financial crisis, no Korean banks were owned by foreigners. The IMF, one of the conditions was you have to allow foreigners to have ownership to take over your banks. And trade and investment liberalization, change in tax law, in competition law, fiscal policies. The government has to cut spending. And some of the standby arrangements even involve very, very sensitive issues, such as government reform, political reform. That's what the IMF, what the IMF required in Indonesia. So the result was Suharto government accepted the IMF package, and very soon it was overthrown, replaced by a more democratic government. So the IMF used to effect political changes in some countries, even control of corruption, punish government officials. Those are very sensitive issues. Imagine somebody wants the U.S. to change its political system. Imagine if the U.S. doesn't have that much money to rescue the AIG, right? To rescue the Wall Street, and you want the IMF. I don't like how the federal state system in your country. Right? You have to change it. You have to remove the First Amendment. it can be like that. So that's why those conditions are very, very controversial. Very, very controversial.
So there are no restrictions on what kind of conditions they can impose? So the conditions don't have to be directly related to financial ideas?
Yes, sure. The IMF, of course, the ultimate purpose is to strengthen financial stability.
Right.
The IMF staff would argue that to do this, you need to control corruption.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have a structured government reform. You need to allow foreign ownership. Right? That's very sensitive for many countries. Right? You need to have trade liberalization to reduce your tariff barrier. And you need to introduce competition law. Right? And you need to increase your interest rate. Right? Yes, we don't want to interfere in your internal affairs. But in order to do this, in order to achieve this goal, you need to do this. I have 500 pages. What else can you say? That's the an alternative emerged in recent years, in the past decade, China. China lends a lot of money to African countries, to Latin American countries, without asking for anything. No condition, just use the money. One example is Pakistan, right? China gave Pakistan money, and some money, and Pakistan asked it, that the how do you want us to spend the money? And the Chinese government officials were shocked. It's your business. We don't want you. It's your money. You use it, right? Use it. So that's the China has because China is actually financially much more powerful than the IMF and has more money to dispense. And for IMF and the underlying Western powers, this is a very serious challenge. Very serious challenge, because behind the conditions, the conspiracy theory again suggests that there is some hidden agenda, like the Western countries want to use the IMF to change the political system in some developing countries, in Africa, either for political purposes or for very good humanitarian purposes. Right? You can probably you would imagine there's nothing wrong to use the IMF to change the regime in Sudan, right? For the U.S., it will be great if you can use IMF to change the political regime in North Korea, right? Otherwise, you will need to have a war to address it. So many observers believe there are hidden agenda behind the IMF practice of conditionality, and now China says that use the money. We don't want to ask for anything from you. So the Western scholars believe that this actually helped those dictatorships in some developing countries. Those guys are in financial crisis; they are about to collapse. Suddenly, you have a Chinese money. Wonderful, right? They will last for another 3 decades. So that's the but China is not I said to you too. China is not
Samaritan.
Yeah, good Samaritan. China is not there because China has a good heart. China wants to help us. So China certainly has its own purpose. This is not a charity. The Chinese money is not a charity. China's purpose is not politically well. It might be, there might be some strategic purposes, but they are mainly related to two things. First, the support of the developing countries in the UN. So China has a lot of supporters in the UN. It was for the human rights issues. So no human rights resolution to condemn China has ever been passed, ever been put on the table. And China need supporters for a number of other issues. A second purpose is more economic. China needs to get natural resources. To lock up the natural resources from those developing countries. I give you money, and you allow our companies to invest in your natural resources and energy on commercial basis. China is actually very it's very successful, and China is actually very reasonable. So they normally cooperate with the government, share the profits with the local people and the government. And a lot of the Chinese aids are related to infrastructure development. So China build a railway, China build a stadium, and China build the health system. Chinese doctors are sent to Africa, to Cambodia, to help the local people. So this is how the Chinese aid work, and China's lending works. So China has no principle here. China build railway, China build railway for the people, build recreation center for the people, and China also build presidential houses for the elites. So that's how the Chinese money works in African and in Latin America, mainly in Africa. So that's very much a very different perspective of looking at things, of doing things. Now we come to the original question, what's wrong with conditionality? What's wrong with conditionality? Which way, the Chinese approach and the IMF approach? You do not need to be judgmental, but you must have some view to to voice.
I think there's middle ground.
So what is the end ground?
I don't think it has to be one or the other. I think if there's a process in place where the loan can be declined and an alternate set of resolutions can be formed, but if you know, America or China, well, in this instance, the United States, is suggesting that you have a deeply flawed system that is the reason why you are losing money, especially if we're talking about debt relief and not new construction, then you, for us to be able to invest this money in you, we don't want to give it away for no reason, no gain. We're not getting oil rights or natural gas rights or anything like that back. We're looking for the stability of what the government is. But I think that we have to address the fact that you have to give the borrower a chance to at least negotiate the terms on somewhat of a
level
basis and not just work at it with heavy hand.
Yeah. But China does a better job in this regard and actually communicate more with the local officials. Every 2 years, the World Trade Organization has a review of China's trade policy. The WTO asked for 1,500 questions, and many of the questions were about Chinese activities in Africa. And very interestingly, China was questioned by the Western countries, and many of the African countries rise to defend China. Say China is doing good things in our country. Well, of course, because China always non-interference and no condition and work with the government. That's the Chinese approach.
But the Chinese also have different goals that they're attempting to get out of it. I mean, they do crave the national resources.
Yeah.
The United States is working for more of a political structure where they have their tentacles in everything.
Yeah.
And if this dictatorship that China would be willing to give the money to is enhanced, then that can affect some of their policy goals over here. And I believe if the United States and China were reversed, they'd behave very similarly in both fashions.
Right, yeah. So China and the U.S. can work together to come up with a middle way. Indeed, come up with a middle way because of the IMF has been too idealistic. But it's very difficult for the IMF to give up those conditions. For the IMF, it's a matter of principle. So the control of corruption, shouldn't we ask it? It's good to ask. Isn't it important to control corruption for the IMF? That's a matter of principle. But the IMF made a lot of mistakes because if you ask too much, you make a mistake. You make a mistake, indeed. Like for example, in the Asian financial crisis, the IMF actually worsened the situation in Indonesia because the IMF asked Indonesia to increase the interest rate, and to close financial institutions. close inefficient financial institutions and to close a lot of firms. Sounds like good, but a disastrous decision. When you are in financial crisis, the thing you need the most is what? Liquidity. You need to, that's actually what the US did, what the US government did for this financial crisis, right? The US government injected more money into the system. But the IMF asked those countries in crisis to tighten their supply of money. That's a fatal crisis. That's a huge mistake. That's a huge mistake. The IMF later apologized for asking so. And Mahathir, the Prime Minister of Malaysia, realized this very soon, and he cut off Malaysia's relationship with the IMF, and he closed the door and decreased the interest rate rather than kind of closing those financial institutions. He rescued them, helped them, so they can continue to provide credit to their clients. People need money in crisis. You need to give people money, right? When the economy is in good condition, they can repay you. But the IMF made very serious mistake in the Asian financial crisis. And the IMF, after 2002, the IMF redesigned its conditions, not the conditions, not according to the new guidelines of conditions. The IMF now willing to give more power to the nation states. It's very difficult to maintain a balance here. Again, we have to ask, we can't be judgmental here, because what's wrong with the conditions, right? Those conditions sound very good, and you can't argue that the Chinese approach is better, because that's basically doing nothing, asking for nothing. That wouldn't. Whether the underlying argument is economic, the Chinese argument is very simple. Better economic development leads to good governance. So we help the country's economy. If the country's economy grows, then it will have a better government, better governance, and people will have better life, better human rights protection. So this Chinese argument is very simple, very simple. So that's there's no definite answer. We can't be judgmental here, but that's a very